Hello, and welcome to episode number 15 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Believing intelligent non-human life exists elsewhere in the cosmos is one thing. That notion now has widespread acceptance, even amongst diehard scientific materialists. But believing that non-human intelligence is here, in our own very backyard, so to speak, is something else entirely. For many, that notion flies in the face of common sense. Taking it a step further, believing widespread accounts of alien-human contact and even of abductions of people from the cozy comfort of their bedrooms in the middle of the night is, for a large portion of the population, simply a bridge too far. But as if that weren't already a lot to try to cognize, there is yet another key piece to the mythos of the UFO phenomenon that demands to be reckoned with. I speak of the notion of alien-human hybrids, beings apparently already in our midst, walking amongst us, whose very substance is a mixture of human and extraterrestrial genetic material. What are we to make of these claims? On the one hand, our understanding of biology screams foul. Surely a life form indigenous to another planet, not to mention another star system altogether, for that matter, is simply not going to be biologically compatible with a modern Homo sapien. Surely you can no more interbreed an extraterrestrial and a human being than you can an ant and a rabbit. And even if that were possible, by some feat of technological wizardry that we just can't fathom at this point in our civilization's history, this simply begs the question, why? Why would this even be something a supposedly vastly technologically superior alien species would want to do? Is this a science experiment to them? A game of biological manipulation that they play just to see what kinds of strange organisms result? Is this something we imagine a superior intelligence doing? Doesn't that raise alarms in another part of our thinking, the part that assumes a superior alien intelligence would be too highly conscious to play such games? Of course, again, assuming that they are supposedly both our technological and moral, ethical superiors, perhaps there is a reason after all, but one that we simply cannot fathom based on our own civilization's rather young age and rather modest center of gravity in terms of evolutionary development. Or, perhaps there is a way we can glean the intention behind such activity, if indeed it is going on, as the literature behind the UFO phenomenon would have us believe. Perhaps we can do this, secondhand as it were, by listening to the very people who have stepped forward to claim that they themselves are walking, talking, breathing examples of these very alien-human hybrids we're speaking of. Not only do these people exist, those who claim to be hybrid ET human entities, or hubrids, as some call them, but they've stepped out from the shadows in recent years to proclaim they have a message from the ET civilizations from which they, in part, spawn. And they're saying this is a message that we all need to hear, one that is, in fact, perhaps vitally important for the very survival of our species. Indeed, a message central to the very reason for their existence. An exploration of the evidence and the implications behind this notion that there is a group of alien-human hybrids already walking amongst us on every continent on the Earth is the topic of this, the 15th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. In last week's podcast, I read a foreword written by Grant Cameron to a book titled Meet the Hybrids, The Lives and Missions of ET Ambassadors on Earth. That book is a major resource for today's podcast. It's written by two people, Miguel Mendonca and Barbara Lamb. Miguel Mendonca is an Anglo-Azorean writer currently based in Bristol, England, whose background includes the writing of textbooks, articles, and papers used by campaigners around the world endeavoring for better renewable energy laws. Miguel now writes both fiction and nonfiction on topics such as politics, relationships, spirituality, consciousness, and, of course, front and center in our discussion today, ufology. Barbara Lamb, his co-author, who we've mentioned before on this podcast, often in contrast to David Jacobs, who we'll discuss later, is best known in this field for her extensive body of work as a regression therapist. She is an American from Southern California and is also a licensed psychotherapist. She has worked with over 1,700 people, referencing 2,600 different extraterrestrial encounters. She is a leading expert within the field of ET-human hybridization. Now, for those of you who've tuned in from the beginning and heard the podcast about John Mack several episodes ago, you'll remember we also mentioned David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins. Once again, Jacobs, Hopkins, and Mack are central figures in today's discussion. And I want to quote from the book here as we are introduced to David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins and how they kicked off the work into hybridization. Quote, "The written study of ET-human hybrids has been thin up until now, with only two researchers dedicating themselves to the subject. Their entry points, methodology, and findings have been markedly different. The earliest major work on the subject was The Threat by David M. Jacobs, Ph.D., 1988. He examines the ET agenda, detailing what he understands of the hybrid program, and concludes that its objectives and implications are chilling and profoundly ominous, making him fear for the future of his own children," unquote. Now, of course, those of you who've been tuning in since the beginning of this podcast remember David Jacobs very well. We discussed his conclusions both in the podcast episode on the stealthiness of the others and the potential implications and the potential motivations for that, as well as discussing him and his conclusions in the episode on John Mack. Continuing from this book, I quote, "In the opening chapter of The Threat, Jacobs lays out the history of the field and his own activity within it. It is a fascinating journey, beginning with the largely technological era, which then became more sociological in nature, bridging into the xenopological, the study of ET cultures. He notes that in the 1960s and 70s, the more researchers learned about the behaviors of ETs, the less they understood about their motivation. But there was little reason to conclude that their evasiveness represented anything other than a neutral attitude. However, with the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case in 1961, a new era, the biological, was born. When it became known that the Greys had taken reproductive material from Barney and from a string of other male and female experiencers, the plot thickened. In 1981, Bud Hopkins published Missing Time, a study of the experiences of seven abductees, which included missing time / memory loss and physical marks. Hopkins used hypnotic regression as a means to subvert the memory erasure and gained access to a variety of experiences. In his conclusion, Hopkins deployed logic and instinct to make his way into the biological aspect of the phenomenon. He notes that the evidence for sample taking is clear, which he referred to a genetio-urinary specialist for an opinion. The getting of reproductive material seemed to be the goal, unquote. Now again, in this book, Meet the Hybrids, written by Mendonca and Lamb, we're at the part where they're outlining the beginnings of the documentation of supposed hybridization programs. We just discussed Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs. Next up in the history line is John Mack. And I quote, "The late John E. Mack, MD, a professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, explores experiencer experiences of the hybrid program in his 1999 book, Passport to the Cosmos, Human Transformation and Alien Encounters. In this study, he struggles to determine the extent to which it may be a conventionally material phenomenon. His conclusion tends towards seeing it in the context of the ecological crisis, which the ETs were at pains to impress upon experiencers. Critically, Mack says that he found no psychological explanation for the reproductive narrative suggestive of deception or fantasy. He discusses the views of some who believe that they have contributed to the hybrid program. Jim Sparks and Andrea believe that the hybrids are a backup plan in case humans destroy themselves, while Nona sees them as a less emotional, more intelligent race that will not destroy themselves and their home in the first place. Mack lays out the basic components of the program. Number one, reproductive material is taken. Number two, an embryo is implanted and pregnancy is experienced. Number three, the fetus is removed. And number four, the woman, or occasionally man, is presented with a being which appears to be half human and half ET, which the women are commonly urged to hold, feed, and energize. Unquote. Now, before we get further into the book and the conclusions it draws in terms of the nature of these hybridization programs and the potential ultimate intention of those programs, I'd like us to talk a little bit about how one would verify such things. How could you begin to verify that hybrids even exist? Well, first of all, there's biological markers. But let us not forget, this is not simple to study. It is expensive, and it is difficult to get funding for such studies because of the taboo nature of this topic. Therefore, there essentially is no public research into genomic information associated with people you would call experiencers or hybrids. Now, there have been some small studies done by people interested in this topic, but these tend to be very small studies and looking into things like implants, for instance, and we'll get to more of that later. Something else you could consider in terms of verifying that such things exist is the anecdotal body of evidence, in other words, the experiencer and corroborative testimony. When we see incisions, implants, cuts, etc., that gives us some indication that something biological may have happened. But what's interesting here is, again, if this is an advanced species, an advanced intelligence, we know that even with our own efforts, a single hair will suffice in terms of getting genetic information. Our entire genetic information can be found in a single piece of hair, a single strand. You've even seen detective shows where they can even recover DNA material from someone who leaves crumbs from a piece of cake behind. So again, that begs the question, why would an advanced species need to go to such measures to gain genetic material? But I digress. We'll get to more of that later. Now, even if there are no obvious genetic markers that could be verified by objective researchers, for instance, one could also look to special behaviors or capacities that these hybrids have. If they can demonstrate capacities that the general population does not have, this would lend credibility to the idea that their genetic material has somehow been modified, enhanced. Now, what some people find hard to deal with is this notion that there could be two within one, that we could actually not just have a blend of material that seamlessly creates a new being, but that we may have two different modalities within us, or that hybrids do anyway. And something was brought to mind, a book that I read years ago called Of Two Minds, The Revolutionary Science of Dual Brain Psychology by Frederick Schieffer, an MD and an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry. Now, interesting and relevant to today's discussion, the following was discovered on patients suffering from epilepsy where traditional treatments hadn't worked. And I quote from that book, "The most important idea is that in split-brain patients, there exist two intact, reasonably intelligent, autonomous minds. That is, after these patients had had their corpus callosum cut, they each manifest two separate minds. They become, in effect, two people inhabiting one body." Unquote. And the reason I bring up this study and the findings that Dr. Schieffer found are twofold. Number one, it was discovered that actually we already operate with effectively two minds, that the two hemispheres of our brain are like two separate minds. And when people have their corpus callosum, which connects the two hemispheres, cut, which was done to try and treat people with severe epilepsy, it was discovered to a much greater degree that these really do function like two autonomous minds. So we have two aspects. One, that you have two autonomous minds. And secondly, that even though you do, for most of us walking around, we find a way to seamlessly harmonize these two brains, these two minds, to create one identity. Again, that's interesting when you think about the hybridization program. Also, in terms of trying to talk about how one would verify that hybrids exist, that hybridization programs can actually be verified on a physiological level, we should remember that DNA evidence is not the only way that hybridization may work. Again, this is supposedly being done by a very sophisticated civilization, consciousness, intelligence. They may be doing it in a way that we just can't find evidence of. Also, DNA seems insufficient in explaining the totality of who we are as human beings, even to us. That despite what scientific materialism would have you believe, which insists, almost like a promissory note, that we will find that DNA describes the fullness of who we are. We do not actually find that when we research who someone is and whether or not DNA can give us the full picture. Some have suggested auras, or fields of energy that surround the body, that these may also be central to what makes us, us. And in that sense, it would be more like an energetic overlay. And what's interesting is this is very similar to what the hybrids have described. Also highly relevant to today's discussion is the podcast episode where we discuss the work of Dr. Rudy Shield and Dr. Edgar Mitchell, and the notion that the quantum hologram may actually hold all conscious information. And in that sense, who we are, our core identity, our consciousness, is actually held non-locally. Therefore, it's not held within the brain, as scientific materialism would have you believe. What that also opens up as a possibility in terms of today's discussion is the idea that our body, our brain, is the hardware, so to speak, that downloads or streams the information from the quantum hologram. And in that sense, the fullness of who we are might not actually stream down, not all of it, but just parts of it. And that's interesting for today's discussion because many of these supposed hybrids discuss accessing more information about who they really are, a greater degree of information, even including identities that are not just human, and that is accessible only when they're in the realm of the others, for instance, on board an ET craft. Again, very interesting, opens up additional possibilities when we think about our core identities, our histories, and the fullness of what makes a being a being. Now, in last week's episode, we discussed the phenomenon known as abduction and how people are taken supposedly against their will in a very traumatic experience, but that sometimes afterwards, when they actually connect with the fullness of who they are again, with a greater sense of memory that they can access or stream when in the realm of the others, they remember that actually they volunteered for such activity, perhaps even before they incarnated into a human body. And this book also touches on that as well. And I'd like to quote from the book. This is what one of the supposed hybrids had to say about abduction versus what we might call volunteerism. I quote, "When I'm there, I'm not tied down. I know when I'm going. It takes place first as a light body. Then I materialize up there. I'm never abducted. I'm usually visited before I go. I see a being in my room, I check in with the energy, and we start to chat, either awake or in the next state of consciousness. They don't tell me I'm going, it's more like an invitation. I'm always very willing to contribute. I agree, then I fall asleep and shift between states of consciousness. Then I move through a specific portal with the being next to me. Then we go through the portal onto the ship. I experience it astrally. But the light body materializes as a double and they take the energy imprints." Unquote. Now, this is certainly a slightly different take on the abduction or volunteerism program. Here, the person does have a sense that they are invited to go and give offerings, so to speak. Energetic imprints is what this person calls it. And they volunteer to do this and they're fully aware of the entire process. But interestingly, and this pertains to what we learned about in the free experiencer study, this is done astrally. So it's not so much that their body is going, but some energetic imprint of who they are is what's actually going, and that energy is then imprinted, and this becomes part of the hybridization program. This is curious, and there are slightly different details depending on which hybrid is speaking. But there are some commonalities, and this was just an interesting case for us to think about and what it means to be a volunteer versus an abductee. Now, with this last hybrid, supposed hybrid, they described a situation, a process that was more energetic in nature, that it was more about energetic imprinting. But to be sure, there are other hybrids quoted in the book, studied in the book, interviewed in the book, that describe a much more common physiological kind of procedure that we would see in a hospital in modern day. Now let's move on to the rationale for this hybrid program. And the authors, Mendonca and Lam, actually offer this. I quote, "Having hybrids present on Earth helps to raise humankind's frequency so that humans can evolve and embrace their cosmic family and embrace themselves as star beings. The hybrids are bridges in this way. With major paradigm shifts taking place, humanity is evolving into the new human. This means humankind's DNA is changing in ways which is allowing them to expand in consciousness. They are being activated by the higher frequencies and becoming aware that they have natural skills and talents which they haven't tapped into before because they weren't ready to handle them. This gives humanity an opportunity to develop their natural psychic abilities such as clairvoyance and clairaudience. More people will be experiencing bilocation, teleportation, and learning how to heal themselves and others without having to deal with space-time constraints. Many hybrids are already in touch with these abilities and are using them to be of assistance to others," unquote. Now, in further summarizing the results of this study, of these series of interviews they did with these hybrids, Mendonca and Lam have this to say, quote, "Two key terms came up time and time again when discussing the role of the hybrids, bridge and ambassador. They have slightly varying applications, but there is a general consensus that a key part of their mission is to bridge humans and ETs. And four of them spoke specifically about this, with the term exopolitics and its engaged aspect, exodiplomacy, coming into increasing use. The hybrids could be thought of as a key group of exodiplomats," unquote. And with this notion of bridges and ambassadors, you have the idea that, number one, these hybrids, because they are both ET and human, can serve as translators, as it were, between the two different species, that there are some distinct differences between the two different species. For instance, some of these ET civilizations seem to have more of a sort of common mind rather than so individualistic. They are less dualistic in their thinking in general. And the hybrids help them understand more of who we are as human beings and how we experience reality, because it can be quite different between the two. And that can be a core aspect of this process. They also serve as ambassadors, meaning that if in the future there is some sort of mass disclosure and the general population in the world finds out about these other ET species that are here, that these hybrids can serve as ambassadors to hold a dialogue between the two sides and increase understanding and make the entire process much smoother. Also, in summarizing what they learn from these hybrids, Mendonca and Lam talk about this notion of ascension, that this was a key term that came up time and time again. And they did a lot of synthesizing work to try and understand what was really being said from these different hybrids about this notion of ascension. And quoting from the book, quote, "When attempting to understand the purpose for ET interaction with the Earth and its inhabitants, the one-line summary appears to be, ETs are creating hybrids to help Earth and humanity evolve. This phenomenon, commonly referred to as ascension, can be thought of as a process of physical, emotional, and spiritual evolution. The ETs, which are creating and dispatching hybrids to Earth, have in most cases already ascended. They are evolved beings who value evolution and, like cosmic missionaries, are determined to bring celestial enlightenment to others. The hybrids have a variety of missions within this larger mission, and to help them, they incarnate with various abilities and inclinations. These abilities can be upgraded by the ETs or the hybrids themselves throughout their journey," unquote. Now, this is a good place to insert a point of distinction. Several of these hybrids talk about there being kind of a galactic federation, which is made up of a variety, a group of different ET civilizations from different planets, different star systems, even different galaxies, which are working together in this process, this endeavor of helping Earth and its inhabitants. And that here also we have the idea that at the dawn of the atomic age, as we've discussed before on previous podcasts, there was a sense of increased urgency to help the world because we were in a perilous place. But to be sure, it's not all benevolent ETs. There is also some discussion of some less mature ET species who are not necessarily malevolent or evil, but just self-serving, who have some of their own agendas. And those are here as well, although they are less of the big picture. But the hybrids also make the point that even these less mature ET civilizations are still playing a larger role in the larger scheme of cooperative, evolving, self-discovering cosmos, and that this too plays into the role of volunteerism and decisions that are made by us even before we incarnate into human bodies. Again, it's a complex tapestry being described here, but an interesting one nevertheless. And now I'd like to finish with a few concluding thoughts. The first thing I would like to offer for your consideration is the idea that perhaps everyone is partly hybrid already. And this is somewhat similar to the idea that perhaps all human beings have actually been abducted or contacted, depending on which word you prefer. It's just that a minority of us have the capacity to remember it. Of course, there is already plenty of evidence to suggest that well before the onset of the modern ET visitation era, our DNA was manipulated in the distant past. A common leading theory is that it was done by an ET species in our past, perhaps 10 to 20,000 years ago. It is commonly believed that the evolutionary process alone, as we currently understand it, cannot account for the sum of who we are as a species and the massive increase in capacities we developed about 10,000 years ago. Now, in terms of trying to come to a conclusion as to the veracity, the realness of this supposed hybridization program, what other possibilities are there when we think about all of these different witnesses coming forward, not just to describe contact experiences, but to actually describe hybridization programs? Well, the other possibilities are things like cultural inheritance, that it's the mockingbird effect, that people are just repeating what they've heard and read elsewhere. We could also look at a kind of mass delusion, or perhaps implanted memories on a mass scale. Or it could be a mass collective unconscious effect that we're doing to ourselves somehow. Those are possibilities, but when you look at Occam's razor here, I tend to think that the hybridization program is largely happening. It's real. The question is, what is the ultimate meaning behind it? Certainly, the hybrids interviewed and described in this book by Mendonca and Lamb in the book Meet the Hybrids give us some ideas, not only as to the nature of these hybridization programs, how it's rolling out, so to speak, but also the ultimate intention behind it. And of course, this is not the first time we've come across these ideas. Books by Sherry Wild and Susie Hansen describe something very similar, both in terms of the process and the ultimate intention. And that hybridization is not just about DNA that contains two different sources, but it's also about energetic overlays and identities that go beyond this lifetime. And while in the short term, we may be talking about capacities that are increased that come online for some of these hybrids, ultimately what is being described here is an endeavor that will help the entire human species ascend to an entirely new way of being. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, let's keep this conversation going and growing. Please don't forget to like or subscribe, whether you're listening on a podcast platform or on YouTube. That helps spread the word. And please also don't forget to let others you think would be interested know about this podcast. But for now, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.